Chapter 20. A Gift from a Stranger. Vasya went to the horses every morning at first light during those clipped, metallic days, only a little after her father. They had a kinship in this, to fear so passionately for the animals. At night, the horses were put in the dvor, safe behind the palisade, and as many as would fit were sheltered in the sturdy stable. But during the day they were turned loose to fend for themselves, roaming the gray pastures and digging grass from beneath the snow. One bright, bitter morning, not long before midwinter, Vasya ran the horses into the field, whooping, riding the bareback Mish. But once the horses were settled, the girl dismounted and looked the mare over, frowning. Her ribs were beginning to show through her brown coat, not from want, but from waiting. "He will come again," the mare said. "Can you smell it?" Vasya had not the nose of a horse, but she turned into the wind. For an instant, the smell of rotting leaves and pestilence closed her throat. "Yes," she said grimly, coughing. "The dogs smell it too. They whine when the men set them loose and run for their kennels, but I will not let him hurt you." She began her round, going from horse to horse, with withered apple cores, poultices, and soft words. Mish followed her like a dog. At the edge of the herd, Buran scraped the ground with a forehoof and bugled a challenge to the waiting wood. "Be easy," said Vasya. She came alongside the stallion and put a hand on his hot crest. He was furious as a stallion that sees a rival among his mares, and he almost kicked her before he got hold of himself. "Let him come." He reared, lashing out with his forefeet. "This time I will kill him." Vasya dodged the flying hooves, pressing her body to his. "Wait," she said into his ear. The horse spun, snapping his teeth, but she clung close and he could not reach her. She kept her voice quiet. "Keep your strength." Stallions obey mares. Buran put his head down. "You must be strong and calm when it comes," said Vasya. "Your brother," said Mish. Vasya turned to see Alyosha, hatless, running toward her out the palisade gate. In an instant, Vasya had her forearm behind Mish's withers, and then she was on the horse's back. The mare galloped across the field, kicking up the frozen glaze. The sturdy pasture fence loomed, but Mish cleared the barrier and ran on. Vasya met Alyosha just outside the palisade. "It is Dunya," said Alyosha. "She will not wake. She is saying your name." "Come on," said Vasya, and Alyosha sprang up behind her. The kitchen was hot. The oven roared and gaped like a mouth. Dunya lay atop the oven, open-eyed and unseeing, still except for her twitching hands. She muttered to herself now and again, her brittle skin stretched over her bones, so tight that Vasya thought she could see the ebbing blood. She climbed quickly atop the oven. "Dunya," she said. "Dunya, wake up. It is I. It is Vasya." The open eyes blinked once, but that was all. Vasya felt a moment of panic. She forced it down. Irina and Anna knelt side by side before the icon corner, praying. The tears slid down Irina's face. She wasn't pretty when she cried. "Hot water," snapped Vasya, turning round. "Irina, for God's sake, praying will not keep her warm. Make soup." Anna looked up with venomous eyes, but Irina, with surprising quickness, got to her feet and filled the pot. All that day, Vasya sat at Dunya's side, hunched atop the oven. She packed blankets around her nurse's shriveled body and tried to coax broth down her throat. But the liquid dribbled out of her mouth, and she would not wake. All that long day, the clouds drifted in, and the daylight darkened. In the late afternoon, Dunya sucked in a breath as though she meant to swallow the world, and caught at Vasya's hands. Vasya jerked back in surprise. The strength in her old nurse's grip astonished her.
Dunya, she said.
The old lady's eyes wandered.
I did not know, she whispered. I did not see.
You will be all right, said Vasya.
He has one eye. No, he has blue eyes. They are the same. They are brothers. Vasya, remember.
And then her hand fell away, and she lay still, mumbling to herself. Vasya spooned more hot drinks down Dunya's throat. Irina kept the fire roaring. But the old lady's pulse faded with the daylight. She ceased to mutter and lay open-eyed.
Not yet,
she said to the empty corner, and sometimes she cried.
Please,
she said then.
Please.
The feeble day flickered, and a hush fell over house and village. Alyosha went out for firewood. Irina went to tend to her peevish mother. When Konstantin's voice broke the silence, Vasya nearly leaped out of her skin.
Does she live?
He said. The shadows lay across him like a woven mantle.
Yes, Vasya said. I will pray with her, he said.
You will not, snapped Vasya, too weary and frightened for courtesy. She is not going to die.
Konstantin came nearer.
I can ease her pain.
No, Vasya repeated. She was going to cry. She is not going to die. As you love God, I beg you, go.
She is dying, Vasilisa Petrovna. This is my place.
She is not.
Vasya's voice came wrenching from her throat.
She is not dying. I am going to save her.
She will be dead by morning.
You want my people to love you, so you made them afraid.
Vasya was pale with fury.
I will not have Dunya afraid. Get out!
Konstantin opened his mouth, then closed it again. Abruptly, he turned and left the kitchen. Vasya forgot him at once. Dunya had not wakened. She lay still, her pulse a thread. Her breathing barely felt on Vasya's unsteady hand. Night fell. Alyosha and Irina returned. The kitchen filled briefly with a subdued bustle as the evening meal was served. Vasya could not eat. The hour drew on and the kitchen emptied once more until it was only they four, Dunya and Vasya, Irina and Alyosha. The latter two dozed on the oven. Vasya was nodding herself.
Vasya, said Dunya.
Vasya jerked awake with a sob. Dunya's voice was feeble but lucid.
You're all right, Dunyashka. I knew you would be.
Dunya smiled toothlessly.
Yes, she said. He is waiting. Who is waiting?
Dunya did not answer. She was struggling for breath.
Vasochka, she said. I have something your father gave me to keep for you. I must give it to you now.
Later, Dunyashka, said Vasya. You must rest now.
But Dunya was already fumbling for her skirt pocket with one stiff hand. Vasya opened the pocket for her and withdrew something hard, wrapped in a scrap of soft cloth.
Open it, whispered Dunya.
Vasya obeyed. The necklace was made of some pale, glittering metal, brighter than silver, and shaped like a snowflake or a many-rayed star. A jewel of silver blue burned in the center. Anna had no jewels to equal it. Vasya had never seen anything so fine.
But what is it? She asked, bewildered. A talisman, said Dunya, struggling for breath. There is power in it. Keep it hidden. Do not speak of it. If your father asks, tell him you know nothing of it.
Madness.
A line formed between Vasya's brows, but she slipped the chain over her head. It swung between her breasts invisible under her clothes. Suddenly, Dunya went rigid, her dry fingers scrabbling at Vasya's arm.
His brother, she hissed. He is angry that you have the jewel. Vasya, Vasya, you must...
She choked and fell silent. From without, there came a long, savage chuckle. Vasya froze, heart hammering.
Again? Last time I was dreaming.
Then came a scrape, the soft sound of a dragging foot, another and another. Vasya swallowed. Noiseless, she slid off the oven. The domovoy was crouching at the oven mouth, frail and intent.
It cannot get in, said the domovoy, fierce. I will not let it. I will not.
Vasya laid a hand on his head and crept to the door. In winter, nothing smells of rot outdoors, but on the threshold, she caught a whiff of decay that turned her empty stomach. There came a flare of burning cold where the jewel lay over her breastbone. She made a low sound of pain.
Wake, Alyosha. Wake the house. But what was it? The domovoy says he will not let it in. I will go and see, Vasya thought. I am not afraid.
She slipped out the kitchen door.
No, breathed Dunya from the oven. Vasya, no.
She turned her head a little.
Save her, she whispered to the empty air. Save her, and I care not if your brother comes for me.
Whatever it was, it stank like nothing else. Death and pestilence and hot metal. Vasya followed the track of the dragging footsteps. There, a quick movement in the shadow of the house. She saw a thing like a woman, hunched down small, wearing a white wrapper that trailed in the snow. It moved crabwise, as though it had too many joints. Vasya gathered her courage and crept nearer. The thing darted from window to window, pausing at each, sometimes reaching out a flinching hand, never touching the sill. But at the last window, that of the priest, it went taut. Its eyes gleamed red. Vasya ran forward. The domovoy said it could not get in, but a swipe of a bloodless fist ripped the ice from its mooring in the window frame. Vasya saw a flash of gray skin in the moonlight. The trailing white garment was a winding sheet, and the creature was naked beneath.
Dead, Vasya thought. That thing is dead.
The grayish, weeping hands seized the high sill of Constantine's window, and it, she, for Vasya caught a glimpse of long matted hair, flung itself into the room. Vasya paused beneath the window, then followed the thing up and over. She pulled herself through with brute strength. It was pitch black inside. The thing crouched, snarling, over a thrashing figure on the bed. The shadows on the wall seemed to swell, as though they would burst out of the wood. Vasya thought she heard a voice.
The girl. Leave him. He's mine already. Take the girl. Take her.
The pain in her breastbone goaded her. The jewel was burning with a fiery cold. Without thinking, Vasya raised a hand and shouted. The creature on the bed whirled, face black with blood.
Take her,
snarled the shadow voice again. The dead thing's white teeth caught the moonlight as it gathered itself to spring. Suddenly, Vasya realized that there was someone else beside her. Not a dead woman, nor a voice made of shadows, but a man in a dark cloak. She could not see his face in the darkness. Whoever this other was, he seized her hand and dug his fingers into her palm. Vasya swallowed a cry.
You are dead, said the newcomer to the creature, and I am still master. Go.
His voice was like snow at midnight. The dead thing on the bed cowered back, wailing. The shadows on the wall seemed to rise up in clamorous fury, growling.
No, ignore him. He is nothing. I am master. Take her. Take.
Vasya felt the skin of her hand split and blood drip to the floor. She knew a fierce exultation.
Go,
she said to the dead thing, as though she had always known the words.
By my blood, you are barred from this place.
She curled her hand round the hand that held hers, felt it slick with her blood. For an instant, the other hand felt real, cold and hard. She shuddered and turned to look, but there was no one there. The shadows on the wall seemed suddenly to shrink, quivering, crying out, and the dead creature's lips writhed back over long, thin teeth. It shrieked at Vasya, turned, and made for the window. It gained the sill, dropped into the snow, and bounded for the woods, faster than a running horse, the tangled, filthy hair streaming out behind. Vasya did not see it go. She was already at the bed, pulling away the filthy blankets, looking for the wound on the priest's naked throat. The voice of God had not spoken to Konstantin Nikonovich that evening. The priest had prayed alone, hour after hour, but his thoughts would not settle on the well-worn words.
Vasilisa is wrong, Konstantin had thought. What is a little fear if it saves their souls?
He'd almost gone back to the kitchen to tell her so, but he was weary and stayed in his room, kneeling, even after it grew too dark to see the peeling gold on the icon. Just before moonrise, he went to bed and dreamed. In his dream, the gentle-eyed virgin stepped down from her wooden panel. An unearthly light was in her face. She smiled. More than anything, he wanted to feel her hand on his face, to have her blessing. She bent over him, but it was not her hand he felt. Her mouth grazed his forehead, touched his eyes. Then she put a finger under his chin, and her mouth found his. She kissed him again and again. Even dreaming, shame warred with desire. Feebly he tried to push her away, but the blue robes were heavy. Her body was like a coal against his. At last he yielded, turning his face to hers with a groan of despair. She smiled against his mouth, as though his anguish pleased her. Her mouth darted down to his throat with the speed of a stooping hawk. Then she shrieked and Konstantin jerked awake, pinned beneath a quivering weight. The priest took a full breath and gagged. The woman hissed and rolled off him. He caught a glimpse of matted hair that half-hid eyes like rubies. The creature made for the window. He saw two other figures in his room, one limbed in blue, the other dark. The blue shape reached for him. Weakly, Konstantin groped for the cross about his neck, but the blue-lit face was Vasilisa Petrovna's, an icon in itself, all hard angles and huge eyes. Their eyes met for a moment, his wide with shock, and then her hands went to his throat, and he fainted. He was not hurt. His throat and arm and breast were unmarked. So much Vasya felt, groping in the dark, and then a hammering came on the door. Vasya sprang for the window and half fell into the dvor. The moon shone over the snowy yard. She dropped to earth and crouched in the shadow of the house, shaking with cold and the aftermath of terror. She heard men burst into the room and pull up short. Clinging with both hands, Vasya was just tall enough to peer over Konstantin's sill. The room stank of decay. The priest sat bolt upright, clutching his neck. Vasya's father stood over him, holding a lantern.
Are you all right, Batyushka? Pyotr said. We heard the cry.
Yes, replied Konstantin, faltering, wild-eyed.
Yes, forgive me. I must have cried out in my sleep.
The men in the doorway looked at each other.
The ice broke, said Konstantin.
He climbed out of bed and staggered as he found his feet.
The cold gave me bad dreams.
Vasya ducked hastily as their pale faces turned toward her hiding place. She crouched in the shadow of the house beneath the window, trying not to breathe. She heard her father grunt and stride across to the broken casement, where the whole block of ice had fallen away. The shadow of his head and shoulders fell over her as he leaned warily into the door. Blessedly, he did not look down. Nothing moved in the dooryard. Then Pyotr drew the shutters closed and placed a wedge between. But Vasya did not hear it. The instant the shutters closed, she was sprinting silently for the winter kitchen. The kitchen was warm and dark, womb-like. Vasya slipped softly through the door. She ached in every limb.
"Vasya?" Alyosha said.
Vasya clambered atop the oven. Alyosha knelt up beside her.
"It's all right, Dunya," said Vasya, taking her nurse's hands. "You will be all right now. We are safe."
Dunya opened her eyes. A smile touched her shrunken mouth.
"Marina will be proud, my Vasochka," she said. "I will tell her when I see her."
"You will do nothing of the kind," said Vasya. She tried to smile, though her eyes blurred with tears.
"We're going to get well again."
At that, the old lady lifted a cold hand and, with surprising firmness, pushed Vasya away.
"No, I am not," she said, with a little of her old tartness. "I have lived to see all of my little ones grown, and I want nothing more than to die with my last three children on either side."
Irina was awake now too, and Dunya's other hand reached out and found hers. Alyosha laid his hand over them all. He spoke up before Vasya could protest.
"Vasya, she's right," he said. "You must let her go. It will be a cruel winter, and she is weary."
Vasya shook her head, but her hand wavered.
"Please, my darling," whispered the old lady. "I am so tired."
Vasya hesitated for a frozen moment, then tipped her head in a tiny nod. The old lady laboriously freed her other hand and clasped Vasya's in both of hers.
"Your mother blessed you at her parting, and now I do the same. Be at peace."
She paused as though listening.
"You must remember the old stories. Make a stake of rowan wood. Vasya, be wary. Be brave."
Her hand fell away, and she lay silent. Irina and Alyosha and Vasya were left to pick up her cold hands, straining to hear the sound of her breathing. Finally, Dunya roused herself and spoke again, so low that they had to lean close to catch the words.
"Lyoshka," she whispered, "will you sing for me?"
"Of course," whispered Alyosha. He hesitated, then drew a deep breath.
"There was a time not long ago when flowers grew all year, when days were long and nights star-strewn, and men lived free from fear."
Dunya smiled. Her eyes glowed like a child's, and in her smile, Vasya saw the shadow of the girl she had been.
"But seasons turn and seasons change. The wind blows from the south, the fires come, the storms, the spears, the sorrow and the dark."
A wind was rising without, the cold wind that portends snow. But the three atop the oven sat insensible. Dunya listened, open-eyed, her gaze fixed on something that even Vasya could not see.
"But far away there is a place where yellow flowers grow, where rising sun lights stony shore and gilds the flying foam, where all must end, and all..."
Alyosha was cut off. The wind slammed the kitchen door open and tore shrieking through the room. Irina gave a little scream. With the wind came a black-cloaked figure, though no one saw it but Vasya. The girl caught her breath. She had seen it before. The figure gave her a single, lingering look, then reached out to lay long fingers on Dunya's throat. The old lady smiled.
"I am not afraid anymore," she said.
Next moment, the shadow came. It fell between the black-cloaked figure and Dunya as an axe cleaves wood.
"Oh, brother," said the shadow voice, "so unwary."
The shadow smiled, a great black gaping smile, and seemed to reach out and seize Dunya with two vast arms. The peace on Dunya's face turned to terror. Her eyes started from her head, bulging, and her face turned scarlet. Vasya found herself on her knees, frightened, bewildered, shuddering with sobs.
"What are you doing?" she shouted. "No, let her go!"
The wind roared again through the room, first a wind of winter, and then the humid, crackling wind that runs before a summer storm. But the wind died quick as it had risen, taking with it both the shadow and the black-cloaked man.
"Vasya," said Alyosha into the silence. "Vasya."
Pyotr and Konstantin rushed in, the men of the household on their heels. Pyotr was flushed with cold. He had not gone to bed after the incident in the priest's room, but set his men to patrol the sleeping village. They had all heard Vasya shouting. Vasya looked down at Dunya. Dunya was dead. Blood suffused her face, and a little foam flecked the corners of her mouth. Her eyes bulged, the dark swimming in pools of red.
"She died afraid," Vasya said, very softly, shaking. "She died afraid."
"Come on, Vasochka," said Alyosha. "Come down."
He had tried to close Dunya's eyes, but they bulged too much. The last thing Vasya saw before she climbed off the oven was the look of horror on Dunya's dead face. Chapter 21. The Hard-Hearted Child. They laid Dunya in the bathhouse, and at dawn, the women came loud as hens cackling. They bathed Dunya's withered body, they wrapped her in linen, and sat vigil beside her. Irina knelt weeping, her head in her mother's lap. Father Konstantin knelt too, but it did not seem that he prayed. His face was white as linen. Again and again, his trembling hand felt at his unmarked throat. Vasya was not there. When the women looked for her, she was not to be found.
"She has always been a hoyden," muttered one to another, "but I never thought her so bad as this."
Her friend nodded darkly, mouth pinched small. Dunya had been as a mother to Vasilisa when Marina Ivanovna died.
"It is in the blood," she said. "You can see it in her face. She has a witch's eyes."
At first light, Vasya crept outside, a shovel over her shoulder. Her face was set. She made a few preparations, then went to find her brother. Alyosha was chopping firewood. His axe whistled down so hard that the logs burst apart and lay strewn in the snow at his feet.
"Yoshka," said Vasya, "I need your help."
Alyosha blinked at his sister. He had been weeping. The ice crystals glinted in his brown beard. It was very cold.
"What, Vasya?"
"Dunya gave us a task."
The young man's jaw tightened.
"This is hardly the time," he said. "Why are you here? The women are keeping vigil. You should be with them."
"Last night," said Vasya urgently, "there was a dead thing in the house, an upir, like in Dunya's stories. It came as she was dying."
Alyosha was silent. Vasya met his gaze. His knuckles showed white when he drove the axe down again.
"Ran the monster off, did you?" he said with some sarcasm between chops. "My little sister, all by herself?"
"Dunya told me," Vasya said. "She said to remember the stories. Make a stake of birchwood," she said. "Remember? Please, brother."
Alyosha paused in his chopping.
What are you suggesting? We must get rid of it.
Vasya took a deep breath.
We need to look for disturbed graves.
Alyosha frowned. Vasya was white to the lips, her eyes great dark holes.
Well, we will see, Alyosha said with the barest edge of irony. Let's go dig up the cemetery. Truly, it has been too long since father beat me.
He stacked his wood and hoisted his axe. It had snowed in the hour before dawn. There was nothing to be seen in the graveyard but vague hummocks beneath the sparkling drifts. Alyosha glanced at his sister.
What now?
Vasya's mouth twitched despite herself.
Dunya always said that male virgins are best for finding the undead. You walk in circles until you trip over the right grave. Care to lead, brother? You're out of luck, I'm afraid, Vasochka, said Alyosha with some asperity, and have been for some time. Do we need to kidnap a peasant boy?
Vasya assumed a righteous expression.
Where greater virtue fails, the lesser must do its poor best, she informed him, and clambered first among the glittering graves.
In honesty, she doubted that virtue had much to do with it. The smell hung like evil rain over the graveyard, and it was not long before Vasya stopped, choking, in a familiar corner. She and Alyosha looked at each other, and her brother began to dig. The earth ought to have been stiff with frost, but it was moist and fresh tumbled. As Alyosha cleared away the snow, the smell struck up with such force that he turned away, gagging. But lips tight, he drove his shovel into the earth. In a surprisingly short time, they had uncovered the head and torso of a figure, wrapped in a winding sheet. Vasya drew out a small knife and cut the cloth away.
Mother of God, said Alyosha, and turned away.
Vasya said nothing. Little Agafya's skin was the grayish white of a corpse, but her lips were berry red, full and tender, as they had never been in life. Her eyelashes cast lacy shadows on her wasted cheeks. She might have been asleep, at peace in a bed of earth.
What do we do? Alyosha asked, very pale and breathing as little as possible. A stake through the mouth, said Vasya. I made a stake this morning.
Alyosha shuddered but knelt. Vasya knelt beside him, hands trembling. The stake was crudely shaped but sharp, and she hefted a large rock to do the hammering.
Well, brother, said Vasya, will you hold its head or drive in the stake?
He was white at the snowdrifts, but he said,
I'm stronger than you.
True enough, said Vasya. She handed over stake and rock and pried open the thing's jaws. The teeth, sharp as a cat's, gleamed like bone needles. The sight of them shook Alyosha out of his stupor. Gritting his teeth, he thrust the stake between the red lips and slammed the rock down. Blood spurted, welling out of the mouth and over the gray chin. The eyes flew open, huge and horrible, though the body did not stir. Alyosha's hand jerked. He missed the stake, and Vasya snatched her fingers away just in time. There was a nasty crunch as the stone shattered the right cheekbone. The thing let out a thin scream, though still it did not move. To Vasya, it seemed that a roar of fury came faintly from the woods. Hurry, she said. Hurry, hurry! Alyosha bit his tongue and resettled his grip. The rock had made a shapeless ruin of the face. He struck the stake again and again, sweating despite the cold. At last, the tip of the stake grated against bone, and a final, ferocious strike sent the stake out through the other side of the skull. The light went out of the corpse's open eyes, and the stone fell from Alyosha's nerveless fingers. He flung himself away, gasping. Vasya's hands dripped blood, and worse things, but she let go of Agafya almost absently. She was staring into the forest.
Vasya, what is it? Alyosha asked.
I thought I saw something, Vasya whispered. Look there.
She was on her feet. A white horse and a dark rider were cantering away, swallowed almost instantly in the loom of the trees. Beyond them, it seemed she saw another figure, like a great shadow, watching. "There is no one here but us, Vasya," said Alyosha. "Here, help me bury her and smooth the snow. Hurry. The women will be looking for you."
Vasya nodded and hefted the shovel. She was still frowning.
"I have seen the horse before," she said to herself, "and her rider, who wears a black cloak. He has blue eyes."
Vasya did not go back to the house after the upir was buried. She washed the earth and blood from her hands, went to the stable, and curled up in Mish's stall. Mish nuzzled the top of her head. The Vasila sat beside her. Vasya sat there a long time and tried to cry. For Dunya's face as she died, for the bloody ruin of Agafya, even for Father Constantine. But though she sat a long time, the tears would not come. There was only a hollow place inside her and a great silence. When the sun was westering, the girl joined the women in the bathhouse. All the women turned on her together.
"Heedless," they said. "Wild, hard-hearted."
Softer, she heard,
"Witch woman, like your mother."
"You are an ungrateful little thing, Vasya," gloated Anna Ivanovna. "But I expected nothing better."
That evening, she bent Vasya over a stool and plied her birch switch hard, though Vasya was too old for beatings. Only Irina was silent, but she looked at her sister with a red-eyed reproach that was worse than the women's words. Vasya bore it all, but she could not summon speech in her defense. They buried Dunya at the close of day. The people whispered among themselves all through the quick, freezing funeral. Her father was haggard and gray. She had never seen him look so old.
"Dunya loved you like her daughter, Vasya," he said later. "Of all the days to play truant."
Vasya did not speak, but she thought of her wounded hand, of the bitter, star-strewn night, of the jewel at her throat, of the upir in the dark. "Father," she said that night. The peasants had gone back to their huts. She drew her stool up beside Pyotr's. The flames in the oven leaped red, and there was an empty space at their hearth where Dunya had been. Pyotr was making a new hilt for her hunting knife. He scraped away a little curl of wood and glanced at his daughter. In the firelight, her face was drawn.
"Father," she said, "I would not have disappeared without need."
She spoke so soft that in the crowded kitchen, only they too heard.
"What need then, Vasya?"
Pyotr laid aside his knife. He looked as though he feared her answer, Vasya realized. She bit back the jumbled confession quivering in her throat.
"The upir is dead," she thought. "I will not burden him more, not to salve my own pride. He must be strong for all of us."
"I went to mother's grave," she said hastily. "Dunya bid me go and pray for them both. She is with mother now. It was easier to pray there, in the silence."
Her father looked wearier than she had ever seen him.
"Very well, Vasya," he said, turning back to his hunting knife. "But it was ill done to go alone and with no word. It has made talk among the people."
There was a small silence. Vasya twisted her hands together.
"I am sorry, child," he added more gently. "I know Dunya was as a mother to you. Did she give you anything before she died? A token? A trinket?"
Vasya hesitated, caught.
"Dunya said I must not tell him, but it is his gift."
She opened her mouth. There came a great thundering knock on the door, and a man burst through and fell, half frozen, at their feet. Pyotr was on his feet in an instant, and the moment was lost. The winter kitchen filled with cries of astonishment. The man's beard rattled with the ice of his breathing. His eyes stared out over mottled cheeks. He lay shivering on the floor. Pyotr knew him.
What is it? He demanded, stooping and catching the shuddering man by the shoulder. What has happened, Nikolai Matveyevich?
The man said nothing, only lay curled on the floor. When they drew off his mittens, his frozen hands were like claws.
We'll need hot water, Vasya said.
Get him to speak as soon as you can, said Pyotr. His village is 2 days distant. I cannot think what disaster would bring him here at midwinter.
Vasya and Irina spent an hour rubbing the man's hands and feet and pouring hot broth down his throat. Even when his strength returned, all he would do was huddle by the oven, gasping. Finally, he took food, gulping it down, scalding hot. Pyotr bit back his impatience. At last the messenger wiped his mouth and looked fearfully at his liege lord.
What brings you here, Nikolai Matveyevich? Demanded Pyotr.
Pyotr Vladimirovich, the man whispered. We are going to die.
Pyotr's face darkened.
2 nights since, our village caught fire, said Nikolai. There is nothing left. If you do not take pity, we are all going to die. Many of us have died already.
Fire? Said Alyosha.
Yes, said Nikolai. A spark fell from an oven, and the whole village went up. An ill wind was blowing, and such a wind, too warm for midwinter. We could do nothing. I left as soon as we had dug the living from the ashes. I heard them scream when the snow touched their skin. Better, perhaps, if they had died. I walked all day and all night. Such a night, with terrible voices in the wood. It seemed the screams followed me. I did not dare to stop for fear of the frost.
It was bravely done, said Pyotr.
Will you help us, Pyotr Vladimirovich?
There was a long silence.
He cannot go, thought Vasya. Not now.
But she knew what her father would say. These were his lands, and he was their lord.
My son and I will ride back with you tomorrow, said Pyotr heavily, with such men and beasts as can be spared.
The messenger nodded. His eyes were far away.
Thank you, Pyotr Vladimirovich.
The next day dawned in a dazzle of blue and white. Pyotr ordered the horses saddled at first light. The men who would not ride laced snowshoes to their feet. The winter sun shone coldly down. Great white plumes curled from the horses' nostrils like the breath of serpents, and icicles dangled from the whiskery chins. Pyotr took Buran's rein from the servant. The horse stretched out his lip and shook his head, the ice rattling in his whiskers. Kolya crouched in the snow, eye to eye with Seryozha.
Let me come with you, father, pleaded the child. His hair fell into his eyes. He had come out leading his brown pony and wearing every garment he possessed. I am big enough.
You are not big enough, said Kolya, looking harried.
Irina hurried out of the house. Come, she said, taking the child by the shoulder. Your papa is going. Come away.
You're only a girl, said Seryozha. What do you know? Please, papa.
Go back to the house, said Kolya, stern now. Put your pony away and listen to your aunt.
But Seryozha did not. Instead, he howled and bolted, startling the horses, and disappeared behind the stable. Kolya rubbed his face.
He'll come back when he's hungry.
He heaved himself onto his own horse's back.
God be with you, brother, said Irina.
And you, sister, said Kolya.
He clasped her hand and turned away. Cold leather creaked as the men put up the horses' girths and checked the bindings of their snowshoes. Their steaming breath thickened the icy bristles in their beards. Alyosha stood at the edge of the dvor, a look of thunder on his good-natured face.
You must stay, Pyotr had said to him. Someone must look after your sisters. You will need me, father, he had said.
Pyotr shook his head.
I will sleep easier if you are guarding my girls. Vasya is rash and Irina is fragile. And Lyoshka, you must keep Vasya at home for her own sake. There is an ugly mood in the village. Please, my son.
Alyosha shook his head, wordless, but he did not ask again.
Father, said Vasya, father,
she appeared at Buran's head, face strained, her hair very black against the pale fur of her hood.
You must not go, not now.
I must, Vasochka, Pyotr said wearily.
She had begged the night before.
It is my place, and they are my people. Try to understand.
I understand, she said, but there is evil in the wood.
These are evil times, said Pyotr, but I am their lord.
There are dead things in the wood. The dead are walking. Father, the woods are dangerous.
Nonsense, Vasya, snapped Pyotr.
Mother of God, if she started spreading such stories about the village.
Dead, said Vasya again.
Father, you must not go.
Pyotr seized her shoulder hard enough to make her flinch. All about him, his men were clustered and waiting.
You are too old for fairy tales, he growled, trying to make her see.
Fairy tales, said Vasya.
It came out a strangled cry. Buran threw his head up. Pyotr got a better grip on the stallion's rein and settled the horse. Vasya flung her father's hand aside.
You saw Father Constantine's broken window, she said. You cannot leave the village. Father, please.
The men could not hear everything, but they heard enough. Their faces showed pale beneath the beards. They stared at Pyotr's daughter. More than one glanced toward his wife or his children, standing small and valiant against the snow. There would be no ruling them, Pyotr thought, if his foolish daughter kept on.
You are not a child, Vasya, to take fright at tales, Pyotr snapped.
He spoke calmly and crisply to reassure the men.
Alyosha, take your sister in hand. Do not be afraid, Dochka, he said, lower and more gently. We shall win a brave victory. This winter will pass like the others. Kolya and I will come back to you. Be kind to Anna Ivanovna.
But father!
Pyotr sprang to Buran's back. Vasya's hand closed on the horse's headstall. Anyone else would have been yanked off his feet and trampled, but the stallion pricked his ears at the girl and stood.
Let go, Vasya, said Alyosha, coming up beside her.
She didn't move. He laid a hand on hers where it wrapped round the bridle and bent to whisper in her ear.
Now is not the time. The men will break. They are afraid for the houses and they are afraid of demons. Besides, if father heeds you, they will say he was ruled by his maiden daughter.
Vasya sucked a breath between her teeth, but she let go of Buran's bridle.
Better to believe me, she muttered.
Released, the brave, aging stallion reared up. The subdued men fell in behind Pyotr. Kolya saluted his brother and sister as the party trotted out into the white world, leaving the two alone in the stable yard. The village seemed very quiet when the riders had left. The icy sun shone gaily down.
I believe you, Vasya, said Alyosha.
You drove the stake in with your own hand. Of course you believe me, fool.
Vasya paced like a wolf in a cage. I should have told father everything.
But we slew the upir, said Alyosha.
Vasya shook her head helplessly. She remembered the Rusalka's warning and the Leshy's.
It is not over, she said. I was warned. Beware the dead. Who warned you, Vasya?
Vasya halted in her pacing and saw her brother's face cold with faint suspicion. She knew a twist of despair so strong she laughed.
You too, Lyoshka, she said. True friends, old and wise, warned me. Do you believe the priest? Am I a witch?
You are my sister, said Alyosha very firmly,
and our mother's daughter, but you should stay out of the village until father returns.
The house fell gradually silent that night, as though the hush crept in with a nighttime chill. Pyotr's household huddled by the oven to sew or carve or mend in the firelight.
What is that sound? Said Vasya suddenly.
One by one, her family fell silent. Someone outside was crying. It was little more than a choked whimper, barely audible. But at length, there could be no doubt. they heard the muffled sound of a woman weeping. Vasya and Alyosha looked at each other. Vasya half rose.
No, Alyosha said.
He went himself to the door, opened it, and looked long into the night. At last he came back, shaking his head.
There is nothing there.
But the crying went on. Twice, and then three times, Alyosha went to the door. At last Vasya went herself. She thought she saw a white glimmer flitting between the peasants' huts. Then she blinked, and there was nothing. Vasya went to the oven and peered into its shining maw. The domovoy was there, hiding in the hot ash.
She cannot get in, he breathed in a crackle of flames. I swear it, she cannot. I will not let her.
That is what you said before, but it got in then, said Vasya under her breath.
The fearful man's room is different, whispered the domovoy. That I cannot protect. He has denied me. But here, now, that one cannot get in.
The domovoy clenched his hands.
She will not get in.
At length, the moon set, and they all sought their beds. Vasya and Irina huddled close together, wrapped in furs, breathing the black dark. Suddenly the sound of crying came again, very near. Both girls froze. There was a scratching at their window. Vasya glanced at Irina, who lay open-eyed and rigid beside her.
It sounds like... Oh, don't say it, pleaded Irina. Don't!
Vasya rolled out of bed. Unconsciously, her hand sought the pendant between her breasts. The cold of it burned her flinching hand. The window was set high in the wall. Vasya clambered up and wrestled with the shutters. The ice in the window distorted her view of the dvor. But there was a face behind the ice. Vasya saw the eyes and mouth, great dark holes, and a bony hand pressed to the frozen pane. The thing was sobbing.
Let me in, it gasped.
There was a thin screeching noise, nails on ice. Irina whimpered.
Let me in,
hissed the thing.
I am cold.
Vasya lost her hold on the windowsill, fell, and landed sprawling. No, no, she scrambled to regain the window. But all was empty now and still. The moon shone untroubled over the empty dvor.
What was it? Whispered Irina.
Nothing, Irinka, snapped Vasya. Go to sleep.
She had begun to cry, but Irina could not see her. Vasya crawled back into bed and wound her arms around her sister. Irina did not speak again, but lay long awake, shivering. At last she drifted off, and Vasya put aside her sister's arms. Her tears had dried, her face was set. She went to the kitchen.
I think we will all die if you are gone, she said to the domovoy. The dead are walking.
The domovoy put his weary head out of the oven.
I will hold them off as long as I can, he said. Watch with me tonight. When you are here, I am stronger.
For 3 nights, Pyotr did not come back. And Vasya stayed in the house and kept watch with the domovoy. On the first night, she thought she heard weeping, but nothing came near the house. On the second night, there was perfect silence, and Vasya thought she would die of wishing to sleep. On the third day, she resolved to ask Alyosha to watch with her. That evening, a bloody dusk flamed up and died, leaving blue shadows and silence. The family lingered in the kitchen. The bedchamber seemed very cold and remote. Alyosha sharpened his boar spear by oven light. The leaf-shaped blade threw little dazzles onto the hearth. The fire had burned low, and the kitchen was full of red shade, when a long, low wail sounded without. Irina huddled beside the oven. Anna knitted, but all could see she was clammy and shivering. Father Constantine's eyes were so wide that the white showed in a ring. He whispered prayers under his breath. there came the sound of dragging footsteps. Nearer they came, nearer. Then a voice rattled the window.
"It is dark," said the voice. "I am cold. Open the door. Open it."
Then, tap, tap, tap on the door. Vasya rose to her feet, Alyosha's hands locked around the haft of his spear. Vasya went to the door. Her heart hammered in her throat. The domovoy was at her side, teeth clenched.
"No," Vasya managed, though her lips were numb.
She dug her fingers into the wound on her hand and laid her bloody palm flat against the door.
"I am sorry. The house is for the living."
The thing on the other side wailed. Irina buried her face in her mother's lap. Alyosha stumbled to his feet, spear in hand, but the shuffling footsteps started up, faded into nothing. They all drew breath and looked at each other. Then came the squealing of terrified horses. Without thinking, Vasya wrenched open the door, even as four voices cried out.
"Demon!" shrieked Anna. "She will let it in!"
Vasya had already run out into the night. A white shape darted among the horses, scattering them like chaff. But one horse was slower than the others. The white shape attached itself to the animal's throat and bore it down. Vasya shouted, running, forgetting fear. The dead thing looked up, hissing, and a bar of moonlight fell across its face.
"No," said Vasya, stumbling to a halt. "Oh, no, please. Dunya! Dunya!"
"Vasya," lisped the thing.
The voice was a corpse's cracked wheeze, but it was Dunya's voice.
"Vasya."
It was she, and it was not. The bones were there, the shape and form and grave clothes, but the nose drooped, the lips had fallen in, the eyes were blazing holes, the mouth a blackened pit, blood caked in the lines of chin and nose and cheeks. Vasya wrenched together her courage. The necklace burned coldly against her breast, and she wrapped her free hand round it. The night smelled of hot blood and grave mold. She thought a dark figure stood beside her, but she did not look round to see.
"Dunya," Vasya said. She fought to keep her voice steady. "Get you gone. You have done enough evil here."
Dunya pressed a hand to her mouth. The tears sprang to her empty eyes, even as she bared her teeth. She swayed, quivered, chewed her lip. Almost it seemed she wished to speak. She started forward, snarling, and Vasya backed up, already feeling the teeth in her throat. And then the upir screeched, flung herself backward, and ran like a dog toward the woods. Vasya watched her until she was lost in the moonlight. There came a rasping breath from the horse at Vasya's feet. He was Misha's youngest, little more than a foal. She fell to her knees beside him. The colt's throat was laid open. Vasya pressed her hands to the torn place, but the black tide ran carelessly away. She felt the death as a sinking in her belly. From the stable, she heard the Vasila's anguished cry.
"No," Vasya said, "please."
But the colt lay still. The black tide slowed and stopped. A white mare stepped out of the darkness and laid her nose very gently against the dead horse. Vasya felt the mare's warm breath against her neck, but when she turned to look, there was only a little trickle of starlight. Despair and weariness were a black tide, like the horse's blood on her hands, and they swallowed Vasya whole. She held the stiffening, blood-streaked head in her arms and wept. The hour had grown old, and they should have long since gone to bed, when Alyosha came back into the winter kitchen. He was gray-faced, his clothes all spattered with blood.
"One of the horses is dead," he said heavily.
Its throat was torn away. Vasya is staying in the stable tonight. She will not be dissuaded.
But she will freeze. She will die, cried Irina.
Alyosha smiled faintly. Not Vasya. You try arguing with her, Irinka.
Irina pressed her lips together, laid aside her mending, and went to heat a clay pot in the oven. No one was quite sure what she was about until she dished up milk, baked hard with old porridge, picked it up, and made for the door.
Irinka, come back, cried Anna.
Irina, to Alyosha's certain knowledge, had never in her life defied her mother, but this time the girl disappeared over the threshold without a word. Alyosha cursed and went after her.
Father was right, he thought darkly. My sisters cannot be left alone.
It was very cold, and the dvor smelled of blood. The colt lay where he had fallen. The corpse would freeze overnight, and tomorrow was soon enough to bring the men to butcher it. The stable seemed empty when Alyosha and Irina went inside.
Vasya, called Alyosha. Sudden fear seized him. What if?
Here, Lyoshka, said Vasya. She emerged from Misha's stall, soft-footed as a cat. Irina squeaked and nearly dropped her pot.
Are you all right, Vasochka? She managed, tremulously.
They could not see Vasya's face, only a pale blur beneath the darkness of her hair.
Well enough, little bird, she replied, hoarse.
Lyoshka says you are staying in the stable tonight, said Irina.
Yes, said Vasya, visibly gathering herself. I must. The Vasila is afraid.
Her hands were black with blood.
If you must, said Irina very gently, as though to a beloved lunatic. I brought you porridge.
Clumsily, she thrust the pot at her sister. Vasya took it. The weight and the warmth seemed to steady her.
You would do better to come in and eat it by the fire, though, said Irina.
The people will talk if you stay here.
Vasya shook her head. It doesn't matter now. Irina's lips firmed.
Come along, she said. This way is better.
Alyosha watched in astonishment as Vasya let herself be led back to the house, put into her own place by the oven, and fed.
Go to bed, Irinka, said Vasya at last.
A little color had come back into her face.
Sleep on the oven. Alyosha and I will watch tonight.
The priest had gone. Anna was already snoring in her own chamber. Irina, who was drooping heavily, did not hesitate long. When Irina was asleep, Vasya and Alyosha looked at each other. Vasya was white as salt, with circles beneath her eyes. Her dress was streaked with a horse's blood, but food and fire had steadied her.
What now? Said Alyosha, low. We must watch tonight, said Vasya.
And we must try the cemetery at dawn
and do what we can in daylight. May God be merciful.
Constantine went to the church at sunrise. He dashed across the dvor as though the angel of death followed, barred the door to the nave, and flung himself down before the icon screen. When the sun rose and sent gray light crawling across the floor, he did not heed it. He prayed for forgiveness. He prayed the voice would come back and remove all his doubting. But all that long day the silence held perfect. It was only in the sad twilight, when there was more shadow than light on the floor of the church, that there came a voice.
Fallen so far, my poor creature, it said.
Twice now the she-demons have come for you, Konstantin Nikonovich. They break your window. They knock at the door.
Yes, groaned Constantine.
Waking and sleeping now, he saw the she-demon's face, felt her teeth in his throat.
They know I am fallen, and so they pursue me. Have mercy, save me, I beg, forgive me, take this sin from me.
Constantine's hands clenched together, and he bowed his face to the floor.
Very well, said the voice mildly. Such a little thing to ask of me, man of God.
See, I am merciful. I will save you. You need not weep.
Constantine pressed his hands to his wet face.
But, said the voice, I would ask something in return.
Constantine looked up.
Anything, he said. I am your poor servant.
The girl, said the voice, the witch. All this is her fault. The people know it. They whisper among themselves. They see your eyes follow her. They say she has tempted you from grace.
Constantine said nothing.
Her fault. Her fault.
I desire greatly, said the voice, that she retire from the world. It must be sooner, not later. She has brought evil upon this house, and there can be no remedy while she is here.
She will go south with the sledges, said Constantine. She will go before midwinter. Pyotr Vladimirovich has said it.
Sooner, said the voice. It must be sooner. There are fires and torments in store for this place. But send her away, and you can save yourself, Konstantin Nikonovich. Send her away, and you can save them all.
Constantine hesitated. The dark seemed to breathe out a long, soft sigh.
It will be as you say, whispered Constantine. I swear it.
Then the voice was gone. Constantine was left empty, rapturous, and cold, alone on the church floor. That very afternoon, Constantine went to Anna Ivanovna. She had taken to her bed, and her daughter brought her broth.
You must send Vasya away now, said Constantine. There was sweat on his brow. His hands trembled. Pyotr Vladimirovich is too soft-hearted. Perhaps she will sway him. But for all our sakes, the girl must go. The demons come because of her. Did you see how she ran out into the night? She summoned them. She is not afraid. It may be that your own daughter, the little Irina, will be the next to die. Demons have appetite for more than horses.
Irina? Anna whispered. You think Irina is in danger?
She quivered with love and fear.
I know it, said Constantine. Give Vasya to the people, said Anna at once. They will stone her if you ask it. Pyotr Vladimirovich is not here to stop them.
Better she go to a convent, said Constantine, after the briefest hesitation.
I would not have her meet God without the chance of repentance.
Anna pursed her lips.
The sledges are not ready. Better she dies. I will not see my Irina hurt.
The first two sledges are ready, replied Constantine. There are men enough. A few would be more than willing to take her away from here. I will arrange it. Pyotr can go see his daughter if he wishes, after she is safe in Moscow. He will not be angry when he knows the whole of it. All will be well. Do you be quiet and pray.
You know best, Batyushka, said Anna peevishly.
Such care, she thought, and all for that green-eyed demon spawn. But he is wise. He knows she cannot stay, corrupting good Christians.
You are merciful, but I will see the girl dead before my Irina is put in danger.
It was all arranged. Oleg, rough and old, would drive the sledge, and Timofey's parents, their hearths empty without their dead son, would be Vasya's servants and guards.
Of course we will do it, Batyushka, said Yasna, Timofey's mother. God has turned his face from us, and that demon child is the reason. If she had been sent away sooner, I would never have lost my child.
Here is rope, said Constantine. Bind her hands, lest she forget herself.
In his mind, he saw the heart brought down in the hunt, feet tied, the eye bewildered, trailing blood in the snow. He knew a twist of lust and shame and satisfied pride.
Tomorrow.
On the morrow, she would go, half a moon's turning before midwinter. Chapter 22 Snowdrops. That night, Anna Ivanovna called Vasya to her.
Vasochka!
Anna shrilled, making the girl jump.
Vasochka, come here!
Vasya glanced up, haggard in the firelight. She and Alyosha had gone to the cemetery at sunrise, but when they dug flinchingly into Dunya's grave, they found it empty. They had stared at each other across the bare, cold earth. Alyosha shocked, Vasya grimly unsurprised.
This cannot be, said Alyosha.
Vasya had taken a deep breath. But it is, she said. Come, we must protect the house. Cold and exhausted, they smoothed the snow and came home. The women cut up the colt to stew his flesh in their ovens and eat it with withered carrots, and Vasya hid herself, vomiting until there was nothing left in her stomach. Now it was the cusp of night, and Dunya would come again to torment them with sobbing. Father was still gone, and Vasya was sick with dread. She went reluctantly to where Anna sat. A small wooden chest, bound with strips of bronze, sat beside her.
Open it, Anna urged.
Vasya looked a question at her brother. Alyosha shrugged. She knelt before the chest and lifted the lid. Inside lay fabric, a great folded length of handsome undyed linen.
Linen? Said Vasya, bewildered. Linen enough for a dozen shirts. Do you intend for me to sew all winter, Anna Ivanovna?
Anna smiled despite herself.
Of course not. It is an altar cloth. You will hem it and present it to your abbess.
Seeing Vasya still puzzled, she added, smiling more widely still, You are going south to a convent in the morning. For a moment, Vasya was lightheaded, and blackness darted before her eyes. She stumbled to her feet.
Does father know?
Oh, yes, said Anna. You were to be sent away with the tribute goods. But we have had enough of you summoning devils. You will go at dawn. The men are ready, and the woman to see to your virtue. Anna smirked.
Pyotr Vladimirovich would have it so. Perhaps the Holy Sisters can make you obey where I could not.
Irina looked troubled and said nothing. Vasya was trembling all over.
Stepmother, no.
Anna's smile slipped.
Defy me? It is done. And you will be bound with ropes if you do not care to walk.
Come, Alyosha broke in.
What madness is this? Father is from home and he would never countenance. Would he not?
Said Konstantin. Now, as ever, his soft, deep voice caught and held the room. It filled the walls and the dark space near the rafters. Everyone fell silent. Vasya saw the domovoy cowering deep in the oven.
He has given it his countenance. A life among holy sisters might save her soul. She is not safe in this village where she has wronged so many. They call you witch, Vasilisa Petrovna. Don't you know? They call you demon. You will be stoned before this evil winter ends if you do not go.
Even Alyosha was silent. But Vasya spoke, hoarse as a raven.
No, she said. Not now and not ever. I have wronged no one. I will never set foot in a convent. Not if I have to live in the forest and beg work from Baba Yaga. This is not a fairy tale, Vasya, Anna broke in shrilly. No one is asking your opinion. It is for your own good.
Vasya thought of the wavering domovoy, of the dead things creeping about the house, of disaster narrowly averted.
But what have I done? She demanded.
She was horrified to find tears in her eyes.
I have hurt no one. I have tried to save you. Father!
She turned to Konstantin.
I saved you from the Rusalka when she would have had you by the lake. I drove off the dead, or I tried...
She stopped, choking, fighting for air.
You? Breathed Anna. Drive them off? You invited your demon cohort in! You have brought all our misfortunes upon us. You think I haven't seen?
Alyosha opened his mouth,
but Vasya was before him. If I am sent away this winter, you will all die. Anna drew in a gasping breath. How dare you threaten us?
I do not threaten, said Vasya desperately. It is the truth.
Truth? Truth? You little liar, there is no truth in you. I will not go, said Vasya,
and so fierce was her voice that even the crackling fire seemed to waver.
Will you not? Said Anna.
Her eyes were wild, but something in her bearing reminded Vasya that her father was a grand prince.
Very well, Vasilisa Petrovna.
I will give you a choice.
Her eyes darted around the room and fastened on the white flowers adorning Irina's kerchief.
My daughter, my true, fair, and obedient daughter, is weary in all this snow for the sight of green things.
You, ugly witch of a girl, will do her a service. Go out into the woods and bring her back a basket of snowdrops. If you do, you will be free to do as you like hereafter.
Irina gaped. Constantine had his mouth open in alarmed protest. Vasya stared blankly at her stepmother.
Anna Ivanovna, it is midwinter.
Go, screeched Anna, laughing wildly. Out of my sight. Bring me flowers or go to the convent. I'll get you gone.
Vasya looked from face to face. Anna triumphant, Irina frightened, Alyosha furious, Constantine inscrutable. The walls seemed to shrink again. The fire burned up all the air, so that no matter how her lungs heaved, she could not draw breath. Terror overtook her, the terror of the wild thing in the trap. She turned and ran from the kitchen. Alyosha caught her at the outer door. She had yanked on her boots and mittens, wrapped a cloak about her and a shawl about her head. He seized her with both hands, turned her around.
Have you gone mad, Vasya?
Let me go. You heard Anna Ivanovna. I'd rather take my chances in the forest than be locked up forever.
She was shaking, wild-eyed.
All that is nonsense. Wait for father to return.
Father has agreed to it.
Vasya swallowed back the tears, but still they crept down her cheeks.
Anna would not have dared otherwise. People say our misfortunes are my fault. Do you think I have not heard? I will be stoned as a witch if I stay. Perhaps father is trying to protect me, but I'd rather die in the forest than in a convent.
Her voice broke.
I will never be a nun. Do you hear me? Never!
She yanked away from him, but Alyosha held her tightly.
I will guard you until father returns. I will make him see sense.
You cannot protect me if every man of the village turns on us. Do you think I have not heard their whispers, brother?
So you mean to go into the woods and die? Snapped Alyosha. A noble sacrifice? How will that help anyone?
I have helped all I can and earned the people's hatred, retorted Vasya. If this is the last decision I can ever make, at least it is my decision. Let me go, Alyosha. I am not afraid. But I am, you stupid girl. Do you think I want to lose you to this folly? I won't let you go.
Surely he would leave finger marks on her shoulders where he held her.
You as well, brother? Said Vasya furiously. Am I a child? Always someone else must decide for me.
But this, I will decide for myself.
If Father Okolyo went mad, I wouldn't let him decide things for himself either.
Let me go, Alyosha.
He shook his head. Her voice softened.
Perhaps there is magic in the forest, enough for me to defy Anna Ivanovna. Did you think of that?
Alyosha laughed shortly. You are too old for fairy tales.
Am I? Said Vasya.
She smiled at him, though her lips trembled. Alyosha remembered suddenly all the times her eyes had moved, following things that he could not see. His arms fell away. They looked at each other.
Vasya, promise me I will see you again.
Give bread to the domovoy, said Vasya. Watch by the oven at night. Courage might save you.
I have done what I can. Farewell, brother. I will try to come back.
Vasya!
but she had slipped out the kitchen door. Father Constantine was waiting for her beside the door of the church.
Are you mad, Vasilisa Petrovna?
Her green eyes flew up to his, mocking now. The tears had dried. She was cold and steady.
But, Batyushka, I must obey my stepmother.
Then go take your vows.
Vasya laughed.
She will see me gone, dead or vowed. She doesn't care. Well, I will please myself and her as well.
Forget your mad folly. You will be vowed. It will be as God wills, and he has willed it so.
Has he? Said Vasya.
And you are the voice of God, I presume?
Well, I was given a choice, and I am taking it.
She turned toward the wood.
You are not, said Constantine,
and something in his voice had Vasya spinning round. Two men stepped out of the shadows.
Put her in the church tonight and bind her hands, said Constantine,
never taking his eyes from Vasya.
She will leave at dawn.
Vasya was already running, but she had only 3 strides head start, and they were very strong. One of them reached out, and his hand snagged on the hem of her cloak. She tripped and sprawled, rolling, striking out, panicked. The man flung himself on her, held her down. The snow was cold on her neck. She felt the scrape of icy rope on her wrists. She forced herself to go limp, as though she had fainted in her fright. The man was more used to tying dead beasts for carrying. His grip relaxed while he fumbled with the rope. Vasya heard the footsteps as the priest and the other man approached. Then she flung herself up, shrieking a wordless cry, jabbing her fingers at her captor's eyes. He recoiled, she wrenched sideways, rolled to her feet, and ran as she had never run in her life. Behind her, she heard shouts, panting, footsteps, but she would not be caught again. Never. She ran on and did not stop until she was swallowed by the shadow of the trees. The clear night lit the snow, which lay firm underfoot. Vasya ran into the woods, bruised and panting. Her loosened cloak flapped about her. She heard shouting from the village. Her tracks showed clear in the virgin snow, so that her only hope was speed. She darted headlong from shadow to shadow until the shouting grew fainter and at last died away.
They dare not follow, thought Vasya. They feared the forest after dark.
And then, darkly, they are wise. Her breathing slowed. She walked deeper into the wood, pushing loss and fear into the back of her mind. She listened. She called aloud, but all was still. The Leshy did not answer. The Rusalka slept, dreaming of summertime. The wind did not stir the trees. Time passed. She was not sure how much. The wood thickened and blotted out the stars. The moon rose higher and cast shadows. Then the clouds came and threw the forest into darkness. Vasya walked until she began to grow sleepy, and then the terror of sleep forced her awake again. She turned north and east and south again. The night drew on, and Vasya shivered as she walked. Her teeth clacked together. Her toes grew numb despite her heavy boots. A small part of her had thought, hoped, that there would be some help in the woods, some destiny, some magic. She had hoped the firebird would come, or the horse with a golden mane, or the raven who was really a prince.
Foolish girl to believe in fairy tales.
The winter wood was indifferent to men and women. The Cherti slept in winter, and there was no such thing as a raven prince.
Well, die then. It is better than a convent.
But Vasya could not quite believe it. She was young. Her blood ran hot. She could not bring herself to lie down in the snow. On she stumbled, but she was growing weaker. She feared her flagging strength. She feared her stiffening hands, her cold lips. In the blackest part of the night, Vasya stopped and looked back. Anna Ivanovna would mock her if she returned. She would be bound like a hart, locked in the church and sent to a convent, but she did not want to die, and she was very cold. Then Vasya took in the trees on either side and realized that she did not know where she was. No matter. She could follow her own trail back the way she had come. She looked behind again. Her tracks were gone. Vasya quelled a surge of panic. She was not lost. She could not be lost. She turned north. Her weary feet crunched dully in the snow. Once more, the ground began to look inviting. Surely she could lie down, just for a moment. A dark shape loomed before her, a tree, all twisted, bigger than any tree Vasya knew. Memory stirred, breaking through her fog. She remembered a lost child, a great oak, a sleeper with one eye. She remembered an old nightmare. The tree filled her sight. Go nearer? Run away? She was too cold to turn back. Then she heard the sound of weeping. Vasya halted, scarcely breathing. When she stopped, the sound stopped as well. But when she moved again, the sound followed her. The sickly moon came out and made strange patterns on the snow. There, a white flicker, between two trees. Vasya walked faster, clumsy on her numb feet. There was no house to run back to, no Vasila to offer her strength. Her courage flickered like a guttering candle. The tree seemed to fill the world. Come here, breathed a soft, snarling voice. Closer. Crunch. Behind her, a step that was not hers. Vasya spun. Nothing. But when she walked, the other feet kept pace. She was 20 paces from the twisted oak. The footsteps drew nearer. It grew difficult to think. The tree seemed to fill the world. Closer. Like a child in a nightmare, Vasya did not dare look back. The feet behind broke into a run, and there came a shrill, desiccated scream. Vasya ran as well, spending her last strength. A ragged figure appeared before her, standing beneath the tree, a hand outstretched. Its single eye gleamed with greedy triumph. I have found you first. Then Vasya heard a new sound, the smack of galloping hooves. The figure by the tree cried to her furiously, Faster! The tree was before her, the wheezing creature behind. But to her left, a white mare came galloping, swift as fire. Blind, terrified, Vasya turned toward the horse. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the upir lunge, teeth shining in the old, dead face. In that instant, the white mare came up alongside. The horse's rider reached out a hand. Vasya seized it and was flung bodily across the mare's withers. The upir landed in the snow where she'd been. The horse tore away. Behind them came twin cries, one of pain and one of fury. The mare's rider did not speak. Vasya, panting, had only a moment to be grateful for the reprieve. She hung head down over the mare's withers, and so they rode. The girl felt as though her guts would come through her skin with each strike of the mare's hooves, yet on and on they galloped. She couldn't feel her face or her feet. The strong hand that had seized her out of the snow held her still, but the rider did not speak. The mare smelled unlike any horse Vasya had ever known, like strange flowers and warm stone, incongruous in the bitter night. They ran until Vasya could not stand the pain or the cold anymore. Please, she gasped. Please. Abruptly, bone-jarringly, they came to a halt. Vasya slid backward off the horse and fell, doubled over in the snow, numb, retching, clinging to her bruised ribs. The mare stood still. Vasya did not hear the mare's rider dismount, but suddenly he was standing in the snow. Vasya stumbled upright on feet she could no longer feel. Her head was bare to the night. It was snowing. The snowflakes tangled in her braid. She had gone beyond shivering. She felt heavy and dull. The man looked down at her, and she up at him. His eyes were pale as water or winter ice. "Please," whispered Vasya, "I am cold."
"Everything is cold here," he replied. "Where am I?"
He shrugged.
"Back of the north wind, the end of the world. Nowhere at all."
Vasya swayed suddenly and would have fallen, but the man caught her.
"Tell me your name, Devushka."
His voice raised strange echoes in the wood around them. Vasya shook her head. His flesh was icy. She pulled away, stumbling.
"Who are you?"
The snowflakes caught in his dark curls. His head was bare as hers. He smiled and said nothing.
"I have seen you before," she said.
"I come with the snow," he said. "I come when men are dying." She knew him. She had known him the instant his hand seized hers. "Am I dying?"
"Perhaps."
He put a cold hand beneath her jaw. Vasya felt her heart throbbing against his fingers. Then all at once, pain struck. Her breath came short. She sank to her knees. Shards of crystal seemed to form in her blood. He knelt with her.
"Karachun," Vasya thought. "Morosko, the frost demon. Death. This is death. They will find me frozen in the snow like the girl in the story."
She took a breath and felt that the frost had spread to her lungs.
"Let go," she whispered.
Her lips and tongue were too cold to obey. "You would not have saved me at the tree if you meant to kill me." The demon's hand dropped. She fell back into the snow, gasping, doubled over. He got to his feet.
"Would I not, fool?"
he said, his voice thin with anger.
"What madness brought you into the forest tonight?"
Vasya forced herself to stand. "I am not here by choice." The white mare came up behind her, blew warm breath on her cheek. Vasya buried her cold fingers in the long mane.
"My stepmother was going to send me to a convent."
His voice was alive with scorn.
"And so you ran? Easier to escape a convent than the bear."
Vasya met his eyes.
"I did not run." "Well, I did run, but only..."
She could manage no more. She clung to the horse at the end of her strength. Her head swam. The horse curved her neck around. The smell of stone and flowers revived Vasya a little. She straightened and firmed her lips. The frost demon came nearer. Vasya put out one hand instinctively to keep him back, but he caught her mittened hand in both of his.
"Come then," he said. "Look at me."
He pulled the mitten away and set his palm to hers. Her whole body tensed, dreading the pain, but it did not come. His hand was hard and cool as river ice. It was even gentle against her frozen fingers.
"Tell me who you are."
His voice sent a shiver of bitter air across her face.
"I am Vasilisa Petrovna," she said.
His eyes seemed to bore into her skull. She bit her tongue and did not look away.
"Well met, then," said the demon. He let go and stepped back. His blue eyes threw sparks.
Vasya thought she had imagined the look of triumph on his face.
"Now tell me again, Vasilisa Petrovna," he added, half mockingly. "What are you doing wandering the Black Forest? This is my hour and mine alone."
"I was to be sent to the convent at dawn," said Vasya. "But my stepmother said I needn't go if I brought her the white flowers of spring, the podsnezhniki." The frost demon stared, and then he laughed. Vasya gazed at him in astonishment, then continued. "The men tried to stop me, but I got away. I ran into the forest. I was so frightened I couldn't think. I meant to turn back, but I got lost.
I saw the twisted oak tree, and then I heard footsteps.
Folly, the frost demon said dryly. I am not the only power in these woods. You should not have left your hearth.
I had to, Vasya rejoined. Blackness darted suddenly before her eyes. Her brief flare of strength was fading fast. They were going to send me to a convent. I decided I would rather freeze in the snowbank. Her skin shivered all over.
Well, that was before I began to freeze in the snowbank. It hurts.
Yes, said Morozko. Yes, it does.
The dead are walking, Vasya whispered. The Domovoy will disappear if I am gone. My family will die if they send me away. I don't know what to do.
The frost demon said nothing.
I must go home now, Vasya managed, but I do not know where it is.
The white mare stamped and shook her mane. Vasya's legs suddenly buckled as though she were a newborn foal.
East of the sun, west of the moon, said Morozko, beyond the next tree.
Vasya did not answer. Her eyelids fluttered closed.
Come then, Morozko added. It is cold.
He caught Vasya as she was falling. Beside them stood a grove of old firs with interlaced branches. He picked the girl up. Her head and hand hung limp. Her heart stirred feebly.
That was a near-run thing, said the mare to her rider, blowing a cloud of steaming breath into the girl's face.
Yes, replied Morozko. She is stronger than I dared hope. Another would have died.
The mare snorted.
You did not need to test her. The bear has done that already. Another instant, and he'd have had her first. Well, he did not, and we must be grateful.
Will you tell her? Asked the mare.
Everything, the demon said. Of bears and sorcerers, spells made of sapphire, and a witch that lost her daughter? No, of course not. I shall tell her as little as possible, and hope that it is enough.
The mare shook her mane and her ears eased back, but the frost demon did not see. He strode into the fir trees, the girl in his arms. The mare sighed out a breath and followed. Part 3 Chapter 23 The House That Was Not There. Some hours later, Vasya opened her eyes to find herself lying in the loveliest bed anyone had ever dreamed of. The coverlets were white wool, heavy and soft as snow. Pale blues and yellows drifted through the weave, like a sunny day in January. The bed frame and posts were carved to look like the trunks of living trees, and over it hung a great canopy of branches. Vasya struggled to get her bearings. The last thing she remembered, flowers. She had been looking for flowers. Why? It was December, but she had to get flowers. Gasping, Vasya heaved herself upright, floundering in the drifts of blanket. She saw the room and fell back, shuddering. The room? Well, if the bed was magnificent, the room was simply strange. At first, Vasya thought she was lying in a grove of great trees. High above hung a vault of pale sky. But the next moment, she seemed to be indoors, in a wooden house whose ceiling was painted a thin sky blue. But she had no idea which was real, and trying to decide made her dizzy. At last, Vasya buried her face in a blanket and decided she would go back to sleep. Surely she'd wake up at home, with Dunya by her side asking if she'd had a nightmare. No, that was wrong. Dunya was dead. Dunya was wandering the woods wrapped in the cloth they'd buried her in. Vasya's brain whirled, but she couldn't remember. And then she did. The men, the priest, the convent. The snow, the frost demon, his fingers on her throat, the cold. A white horse. He had meant to kill her. He'd saved her life. She struggled again to sit up, but only managed to kneel among the blankets. She squinted desperately, but failed to make the room stay still. Finally, she shut her eyes and discovered the edge of the bed by tumbling over it. Her shoulder struck the floor. She thought she felt a brush of wetness, as though she had fallen into a snowdrift. No, now the ground was smooth and warm, like well-planed wood near a hearth. She thought she heard a fire crackling. She stood up unsteadily. Someone had taken off her boots and stockings. She had frozen her feet. She saw her toes white and bloodless. She could not look at anything in the house. It was a room. It was a fir grove under the open sky, and she could not decide which was which. She shut her eyes tight, stumbling on her injured feet. "What do you see?" said a clear, strange voice. Vasya turned toward the voice, not daring to open her eyes. "A house," she croaked. "A fir grove. Both together." "Very well," said the voice. "Open your eyes." Flinching, Vasya did so. The cold man, the frost demon, stood in the center of the room, and at least she could look at him. His dark, unruly hair hung to his shoulders. The sardonic face might have belonged to a youth of 20 or a warrior of 50. Unlike every other man Vasya had ever seen, he was clean-shaven. Perhaps that was what gave his face the odd note of youthfulness. Certainly his eyes were old. When she looked into them, she thought, "I did not know anything could be that old and live." The thought made her afraid. But stronger than fear was her resolve. "Please," she said, "I must go home." His pale stare swept her up and down. "They cast you out," he said. "They will send you to a convent. And yet you will go home?" She bit down hard on her lip. "The domovoy will disappear if I am not there. Perhaps my father has returned by now, and I can make him understand." The frost demon studied her a moment. "Perhaps," he said at length, "but you are wounded. You are weary. Your presence will do the domovoy little good." "I must try. My family is in danger. How long was I asleep?" He shook his head. A faint dry humor curled his mouth. "Here there is only today, no yesterday, and no tomorrow. You may stay a year and be home just after you left. It does not matter how long you slept." Vasya was silent, absorbing this. At last she said, in a lower voice, "Where am I?" The night in the snow had blurred in her memory, but she thought she remembered indifference in his face, a hint of malice and a hint of sorrow. Now he looked only amused. "My house," he said, "as far as I have one." "That is not helpful." Vasya bit back the words before they could escape, but they must have shone on her face. "I fear," he added gravely, though there was a glint in his eye, "that you are gifted, or cursed, with what your folk might call the second sight. My house is a fir grove, and this fir grove is my house, and you see both at once." "And what do I do about that?" Vasya hissed between clenched teeth, quite unable to strive for politeness. In another moment, she would be sick on the floor at his feet. "Look at me," he said. His voice compelled her. It seemed to echo in her skull. "Look only at me." She raised her eyes to his. "You are in my house. Believe it is so." Hesitantly, Vasya repeated this to herself. The walls seemed to solidify as she looked. She was in a rough, roomy dwelling with worn carvings on its cross trees and a ceiling the color of the noon sky. A large oven at one end of the room radiated heat. The walls were hung with woven pictures. Wolves in the snow, a hibernating bear, a dark-haired warrior driving a sledge. She tore her eyes away. "Why did you bring me here?" "My horse insisted."
You mock me.
Do I?
You had been wandering in the forest too long. Your feet and hands are frozen. Perhaps you should be honored. I don't often have guests.
I am honored then, said Vasya. She could not think of anything else to say.
He studied her a moment more.
Are you hungry?
Vasya heard the hesitation in his voice.
Did your horse suggest that as well?
She asked, before she could stop herself. The man laughed, and she thought he looked a little surprised.
Yes, of course. She has had any number of foals. I yield to her judgment.
Suddenly he tilted his head. The blue eyes burned.
My servants will tend to you, he added abruptly. I must be gone a while.
There was nothing human in his face, and for a moment, Vasya could not see the man at all, and instead saw only a wind lashing the limbs of ancient trees, howling in triumph as it rose. She blinked away the vision.
Farewell, said the frost demon, and was gone.
Vasya, taken aback by his departure, glanced cautiously about. The tapestries drew her, vividly alive. The wolves and man and horses looked ready to leap to the floor in a swirl of cold air. She walked the room, examining them as she went. Eventually, she fetched up in front of the oven and stretched out her frozen fingers. The scrape of a hoof sent her whirling round. The white mare came toward her, bare of any harness. Her long mane foamed like a spring cascade. She seemed to have emerged from a door in the opposite wall, but it was closed. Vasya stared. The mare tossed her head. Vasya remembered her manners and bowed.
I thank you, lady. You saved my life.
The mare twitched an ear.
It was little enough.
Not to me, said Vasya, with a hint of asperity.
I did not mean that, said the mare. I meant that you are a creature as we are, formed raw from the powers of the world. You would have saved yourself. You are not formed for convents, nor yet to live as the bear's creature.
Would I have? Said Vasya, remembering the running, the terror, the footsteps in the dark.
I wasn't doing too well at it.
But what do you mean, the powers of the world? We were all made by God.
I suppose this God taught you our speech?
Of course not, said Vasya. That was the Vasila. I made him offerings. The mare scraped a hoof against the floor.
I remember more and see more than you, she said, and will for a considerable time. We do not speak to many, and the spirit of horses does not reveal himself to anyone. There is magic in your bones. You must reckon with it.
Am I damned then? Vasya whispered, frightened.
I do not understand, damned. You are. And because you are, you can walk where you will, into peace, oblivion, or pits of fire. But you will always choose.
There was a pause. Vasya's face hurt, and her sight had begun to fracture. The snowy countryside tugged at the edges of her vision.
There is mead on the table, the mare said, seeing the girl's drooping shoulders. You should drink, then rest again. There will be food when you awaken.
Vasya had not eaten since supper time, before she'd ventured into the forest. Her stomach took a moment, forcefully, to remind her. A wooden table stood on the other side of the oven, dark with age, rich with carving. The silver flagon upon it was garlanded with silver flowers. The cup was of hammered silver, studded with fire-red gems. For a moment, the girl forgot her hunger. She lifted the cup and tilted it in the light. It was beautiful. She looked a question at the mare.
He likes objects, she said, though I do not understand why. And he is a great giver of gifts.
Flagon indeed contained mead, thin and strong, and somehow piercing, like winter sunshine. Drinking it, Vasya felt suddenly sleepy.
Heavy-eyed, it was all she could do to put down the silver cup. She bowed in silence to the white mare and stumbled back to the great bed. All that day, a storm tore across the frozen lands of northern Rus. The country folk ran inside and barred their doors. Even the oven fires in Dmitri's wooden palace in Moscow danced and guttered. The old and the sick knew their time had come and slipped away on the crying wind. The living crossed themselves when they felt the shadow pass. But at nightfall, the air quieted, and the sky filled with a promise of snow. Those who had resisted the summons smiled, for they knew that they would live. A man with dark hair emerged from between two trees and raised his face to a cloud-torn sky. His eyes glowed an unearthly blue as he scanned the mounting shadows. His robe was of fur and midnight brocade, though he had come to the twilight borderlands where winter yielded to the promise of spring. The ground was thick with snowdrops. A song pierced the newborn night, thin and soft and sweet. Even as he turned toward it, Morozko tasted the darker side of the magic he had set in motion, for the music reminded him of sorrow, of slow hours heavy with regret. This sorrow he had not felt, had not been able to feel, for a thousand years. He walked on regardless until he came to the tree where a nightingale sang in the dark. "Little one, will you come back with me?" he said. The tiny creature hopped to a lower branch and cocked its dull brown head. "To live as your brothers and sisters have lived," said Morozko. "I have a companion for you." The bird trilled, but softly. "You will not come into your strength otherwise. And this one is generous and high-hearted. The old woman cannot gainsay it." The bird cheeped and raised its brown wings. "Yes, there is death in it, but not before joy or glory. Will you stay here instead and sing away eternity?" The bird hesitated, then leaped from its branch with a cry. Morozko watched it go. "Follow then," he said softly, as the wind rose again around him. Vasya was still asleep when the frost demon returned. The mare was dozing near the oven. "What think you?" he asked the horse, low-voiced. The mare was about to reply, but a neigh and a clatter cut her off. A bay stallion with a star between his eyes burst into the room. He snorted and stamped, shaking snow off his black dappled quarters. The mare laid her ears back. "I think," she said, "that my son has come where he should not." The stallion, though graceful as a stag, had yet a trace of long-legged colt about him. He eyed his mother warily. "I heard there was a champion here," he said. The mare switched her tail. "Who told you that?" "I did," said Morozko. "I brought him back with me." The mare stared at her rider with pricked ears and trembling nostrils. "You brought him for her?" "I need that girl," said Morozko, giving the mare a hard look. "As well, you know. If she is foolish enough to roam the bear's forest at night, then she will need a companion." He might have said more, but he was interrupted by a clatter. Vasya had awakened and tumbled out of bed, unused to bedding that was also a snowdrift. The big horse, his dark bay coat glowing black in the firelight, minced over, ears pricked. Vasya, still only half awake and rubbing a very sore shoulder, looked up to find herself nose to nose with a huge young stallion. She held still. "Hello," she said. The horse was pleased. "Hello," he answered. "You will ride me." Vasya clambered to her feet, much less thick-headed than at her last waking. But her cheek throbbed, and she had to marshal her tired eyes in order to see only the stallion, not the shadows like feathers that fluttered around him. Once her vision settled, She eyed his back, two hands above her head, with some skepticism.
I would be honored to ride you, she answered politely, though Morosco heard the dry note in the girl's voice and bit his lip. But perhaps I may defer it a moment. I should like some more clothes.
She glanced around the room, but her cloak, boots, or mittens were nowhere to be seen. She wore nothing but her crumpled underdress, with Dunya's pendant lying cold against her breastbone. Her braid had raveled while she slept, and the thick red-black curtain of her hair tumbled loose to her waist. She brushed it from her face and, with a touch of bravado, made her way to the fire. The white mare stood beside the oven with a frost demon at her head. Vasya was struck by the similarity in their expressions, the man's eyes hooded and the mare's ears pricked. The bay stallion huffed warm breath into her hair. He was following so close that his nose bumped her shoulder. Without thinking, Vasya laid a hand on his neck. The horse's ears made a pleased little swivel, and she smiled. There was plenty of space in front of the fire, despite the incongruous presence of two tall and well-built horses. Vasya frowned. The room had not seemed as large as that when she woke last. The table was laid with two silver cups and a slender ewer. The scent of warm honey floated through the room. A loaf of black bread, smelling of rye and anise, lay beside a platter of fresh herbs. On one side stood a bowl of pears, and on the other, a bowl of apples. Beyond them all lay a basket of white flowers with modestly drooping heads. Podsnezhniki, snowdrops. Vasya stopped and stared.
It is what you came for, is it not? Morosko said.
I didn't think I'd actually find any.
You are fortunate then to have done so.
Vasya looked at the flowers and said nothing.
Come and eat, Morosko said. We will talk later.
Vasya opened her mouth to argue, but her empty stomach roared. She bit back curiosity and sat down. He sat on a stool across from her, leaning against the mare's shoulder. She surveyed the food, and his lips twitched at her expression.
It's not poison.
I suppose not, said Vasya, dubious.
He twisted off a lump of bread and handed it to Solovey. The stallion seized it with enthusiasm.
Come, said Morosko, or your horse will eat it all.
Cautiously, Vasya picked up an apple and bit down. Icy sweetness dazzled her tongue. She reached for the bread. Before she knew it, her bowl was empty, half the loaf was gone, and she sat replete, feeding bits of bread and fruit to the two horses. Morosko touched no food. After she had eaten, he poured the mead. Vasya drank from her silver-chased cup, savoring the taste of cold sunshine and winter flowers. His cup was twin to hers, except that the stones along the rim were blue. Vasya did not speak while she drank, but at last she set her cup on the table and raised her eyes to his.
What happens now? She asked him. That depends on you, Vasilisa Petrovna. I must go home, she said. My family is in danger. You are wounded, replied Morosko, worse than you know. You will stay until you are healed. Your family will be none the worse for it. More gently, he added, you will go home at dawn of the night you left. I can promise it.
Vasya said nothing. It was a measure of her weariness that she did not argue. She looked again at the snowdrops.
Why did you bring me these?
Your choices were to bring your stepmother those flowers or to go to a convent.
Vasya nodded.
Well then, there you have them. You may do as you will.
Vasya reached out a hesitant forefinger to stroke one silky damp petal.
Where did they come from?
The edge of my lands.
And where is that?
At the thaw. But that is not a place.
Is it not?
It is many things. Just as you and I are many things,
and my house is many things, and even that horse with his nose in your lap is many things. Your flowers are here. Be content.
The green eyes flared up to his again, mutinous instead of tentative.
I do not like half answers. Stop asking half questions then, he said, and smiled with sudden charm. She flushed. The stallion thrust his great head closer. She winced when the horse lipped her injured fingers.
Ah, Morozko said, I forgot. Does it hurt?
Only a little.
But she would not meet his eyes. He made his way around the table and knelt so their faces were on a level.
May I?
She swallowed. He took her chin in one hand and turned her face to the firelight. There were black marks on her cheek where he had touched her in the forest. The tips of her fingers and toes were white. He examined her hands, drew a fingertip along her frozen foot.
Don't move, he said.
Why would... But then he laid his palm flat against her jaw. His fingers were suddenly hot, impossibly hot, so that she expected to smell her own flesh scorching. She tried to pull away, but his other hand came up behind her head, digging into her hair, holding her. Her breath trembled and rasped in her throat. His hand slid down to her throat, and if anything, the burning grew. She was too shocked to scream. Just when she thought she could not endure it another instant, he let go. She slumped against the bay stallion. The horse blew comfortingly into her hair.
Forgive me, Morozko said.
The air around him was cold despite the heat in his hands. Vasya realized she was shivering. She touched her damaged skin. It was smooth and warm, unmarked.
It doesn't hurt anymore.
She forced her voice to calm.
No, he said. Some things I can heal, but I cannot heal gently.
She looked down at her toes, at her ruined fingertips.
Better than being crippled, as you say.
But when he touched her feet, she could not keep the tears from her eyes.
Will you give me your hands? He said.
She hesitated. Her fingertips were frostbitten, and one hand was crudely wrapped in a length of linen to shield the ragged hole in the palm from the night the upir had come for Konstantin. The memory of pain thundered at her. He did not wait for her to speak. It took all her strength, but she swallowed back her cry while the flesh of her fingertips grew warm and pink. Last, he took up her left hand and began to unwind the linen.
It was you who hurt me, said Vasya, trying to distract herself. The night the upir came.
I did.
Why?
So that you would see me, he said. So that you would remember.
I had seen you before. I had not forgotten.
His head was bent over his work, but she saw the curve of his mouth. Wry and a little bitter.
But you doubted. You would not have believed your own senses after I had gone. I am little more than a shadow now, in the houses of men. Once I was a guest.
Who is the one-eyed man?
My brother, he said shortly. My enemy. But that is a long tale, and not for tonight.
He laid the linen bandage aside. Vasya fought the urge to curl her hand into a fist.
This will be harder to heal than frostbite.
I kept reopening it, Vasya said. It seemed to help ward the house.
It would, said Morozko. There is virtue in your blood.
He touched the wounded place. Vasya flinched.
But only a little, for you are young.
Vasya, I can heal this. But you will carry the mark.
Do it then, she said, failing to keep the tremor out of her voice.
Very well.
He reached to the floor and scooped up a handful of snow. Vasya was for a moment disoriented. She saw the fir grove, the snow on the ground, blue with dusk, red with firelight. But then the house reformed around her, and Morozko pressed the snow into the wound on her palm. Her whole body went rigid, and then the pain came, worse than before. She bit back a scream and managed to keep still. The pain rose past bearing, so that she sobbed once before she could stop herself. Abruptly, it died away. He let go her hand, and she almost fell off her stool. The bay stallion saved her. She fell against his warm bulk and caught herself by seizing his mane. The stallion put his head around to lip at her trembling hand. Vasya pushed him aside and looked. The wound was gone. There was only a cold, pale mark, perfectly round in the middle of her palm. When she turned it in the firelight, it seemed to catch the light, as though a sliver of ice was buried under the skin. No, she was imagining things. Thank you. She pressed both hands into her lap to hide their trembling. Morozko stood and drew away, looking down at her. You'll heal, he said. Rest. You are my guest. As for your questions, there will be answers. In time. Vasya nodded, staring still at her hand. When she looked up again, he had disappeared.